Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. It's my pleasure to share up more private practice stories and wisdom in this, our third season. My guests are generous, creative, and honest. It has been such a joy to be able to hold these conversations and capture these moments for your listening pleasure. We're sure that you'll really enjoy these unplugged chats and these private practice heart-to-hearts. So settle in, let's get the conversation started. Hello, and today on the podcast, I have a bit of a feast for you. I have the very spectacular Elaine Jackson, who is a social worker and is the founding director of Spectrum Clarity. And Spectrum Clarity is many, many things, as is Elaine. And I'm going to get Elaine to talk us through what is Spectrum Clarity. And I really want to get into some chat about social workers and social workers running businesses, because I think you're the first of many, many, many. Hi, Elaine. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I know this is very formal for us, isn't it? It'll become apparent that it'll unravel very quickly. Listeners, settle in. Elaine, what's with social workers and them going into self-employment? Let's start with that bit.
I think social workers have always, if they're accredited mental health social workers, have been in private practice on a clinical side. However, I think with the advent of NDIS, that's like everybody, there's a new opportunity. There are very few social workers who've moved into the NDIS space. There is one person up in Queensland who has a very thriving business, and the AASW absolutely love talking to her. And then there's Spectrum Clarity, and we're new into the market.
There's only two social workers
in the NDIS space.
That's nuts.
Yeah. And we're only doing pretty much service coordination, is what we're registered for in Melbourne. Sorry, that was my husband dropping off my cup of tea, everybody.
That's right. This is auditory. It's fine.
And we only do service coordination in Melbourne at this point in time, but we also do pre-planning in the NDIS space. And we are very old social workers, old-fashioned social workers. So the three of us is a combined experience of about 90 years.
You are old.
Yeah, we are old. So we actually want to go back to the old basics of social work, which we think is missing, and also to provide a customer-centric approach. And that's because of my own lived experience of the sector as a user, because I have a son on the spectrum as well. And so I've been very humbled, and also had to go through that very medical model where everyone's the expert.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And so I have a very different view. As you picked up, it's a social model of health that we apply. So yeah, that's the background.
When did Spectrum Clarity start?
So the idea actually started for me when I had my son's diagnosis of autism. And I was new to the helping children with autism approach, and I went, oh, you've got to navigate this service system on your own. And I'm thinking, I'm a social worker and I think I know it. Well, I didn't. And I dare I say it, and I'll be out there, I'm not a fan of ECIS. So,
oh, God.
So I've gone out there political there, Cathy.
Listeners are dripping up, falling off as we speak. So sorry. As a social worker, the navigation was confronting.
It was confronting about how do you find your speechy, your OT, your psych, and whilst your paediatrician can be really good, how do you know they're any good, and what makes them good? What is it that you're after? So I had to go through that experience when you're also grappling with your own son's, my son's diagnosis, and I went into a depression and extreme anxiety. I had a very thriving private practice in consulting that was earning very, very good money, and I walked away from that to do early intervention with my son because my legacy was my child. So then that's when the idea happened, and I went, how do you do it? How do you fund it? Then I got a role after 5 years. I then got a role as a chief operating officer for a not-for-profit, and then I went, aha, this is how we can do it. And with NDIS, there was a real window. So then so we've been operational 18 months. The year before that.
Only 18 months.
Yeah. So the year before I started, I did a whole lot of business analysis, as you will. I mean, I have an MBA, so I applied that sort of analysis to it and the rigor and the financial modelling. Is this going to work? And then, of course, to be in service coordination space in Melbourne, you have to be accredited to the Department of Health and Human Services standards. So that took me down a whole quality issue. So that's how we built them. So what was our service delivery model? What was our business model? We were going to be outreach. We were never going to have an office. How are we going to keep our overheads low? What was the volume? What do we need to do? And what was going to be our way of working and our style and our ethos? So that's how it started. I suppose launched, it would be 2 years in July, but effectively it took off last Easter. Mm-hmm. And we had only one client last Easter, and it would be fair to say we've grown rapidly and continue to grow rapidly, mm-hmm. particularly in the pre-planning space. And service coordination, we are seeing that drop off in the NDIS world. Mm-hmm. It's about 20 to 30%. And so that's affecting us. So our pre-planning is where we do work. And we use this outcomes framework from the UK called Spectrum Star, and I spent considerable time lining that up to the NDIS price guide so that we're using an evidence-based tool to think about what it is we need to be asking in the price guide and do the rigour that families need to think through before they go into a planning meeting. And we started off gently with these planners, until we realised actually we're advocates, and because the experience of the planners are so varied and the good ones are on the minority. And so we go in fighting for what we need and to take...
Assertively advocating.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
For families, it's very tiring. It's exhausting. And more we are seeing that we are advocating strongly to try and keep that core support and the therapy going, and we're seeing less and less in the service coordination. But I care passionately about families getting that service, that therapy money, and then making sure we're preparing them for the annual review. So that's what we do. And then if they do get service coordination, although we are seeing some clients commissioning us privately, so they're already thinking through at the beginning of a plan, in 12 months' time, the plans won't be the same. They will, in theory, they are dropping by 40%. It's an insurance scheme. We are still using our evidence-based tool to then use an implementation plan to bring the plans to life, making sure that families are protected if they were ever randomly audited, as we are, or their care team. And then we get them ready at around 9 months. But if they're commissioning us privately, we don't have to spend all that time on the formal reporting.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Your business and your strategic and operational pedigree before going into Spectrum Clarity is serving you so brilliantly. I mean, you can't imagine going into business without all of that, the MBA and all of the other work that you've done. And I think there's many an allied health business owner listening to this who really wished that they had some really exclusive high-level business leadership management stuff under their belt. What are your thoughts? How useful has it all been?
Brilliant, because I have obviously an associate degree. Dare I say it, I've got a theology degree, but I've also got a public policy degree and an MBA. So it's actually the public policy degree that has stood me in good stead, because I can understand what that policy environment is. And I've worked in local, state and Commonwealth governments. So, again, I understand that way of working. And then you apply the MBA into all this. So because you have to think about marketing, you have to think about quality, you have to think about your financials. And for us, though, we have a high compliance regime as being registered. And I don't think people, like, you know, we have to, you know, every July we have to report to the Disability Commissioner about complaints and compliments. We have to use the Department of Health and Human Services client information management system for all our reporting of if we have concerns about abuse. Mm. That sounds weird, but they're the things that we have to do. We have to meet with not only NDIS requirements, but we have to meet with the local engagement officer from the DHHS. So we have that component of emails. We have to conform to safety screening. Anytime there's a new policy change, it goes on.
And I'm
looking at my work I have to do with our quality. We've got 6 months to improve our quality improvement. And, of course, our items are small. In truth, we got commendations, which is rare to get by a quality accreditor. So, yes, the answer is if I didn't have my MBA, it certainly stood me in good stead. And because I've also consulted into the not-for-profit, we've developed a business that's very nimble, but it competes with the tier one not-for-profit in business and service delivery model.
Oh, take a breath. It's just awesome. It's just amazing. So that quick growth, given that your doors are been open 13, 14, 15 months or so, who are your beautiful customers? Who loves working with you? Who do you love working with?
What makes me very excited is actually the families making a difference in their life. I once was in, senior management, and it's, you know, we're seeing organisations just, you know, they're struggling. But you can make a difference for me in one person's life. And if we can get the therapy for a child to help them reach their potential, whatever that can be, that's actually what makes me happy. But it also requires having a can-do attitude, because the NDIS is so hard. And I know I'm, as most people know, I'm blunt. I'm straight to the point. I think it's been in the early 50s.
And hormonal.
And hitting that age bracket and life. And I'm a straight shooter, so you're never guessing what I'm thinking. But the NDIS is hard, and the policy and right, the rules are there are no rules. And I spend forever, ever, I read a lot at night to keep up with what's going on. I play in the CEO space, and I go to events. So I'm coming up to the CEO summit coming up in a couple of weeks. That's where I start to meet with the director of the NDIA Assistive Technology Group, which I can ask very specific questions. So I'm off the base questions. I'm trying to dig deep to understand things and what that means for families. And you have to have the can-do attitude, because everything's getting bottlenecked at every point.
Yeah, and tenacity. Good dose of tenacity.
Yeah.
Good dose of resilience sitting there as well.
But there are times where me and my team, we get tired, and now we have headaches, we walk away, and it's hard. So I love the families, definitely love the some of the allied health. You know, we aren't all things to all people, I get that. And there's a few really great paediatricians that are referring to us that just love what we do. And it's true, we are getting phenomenal results. We know our methodology is paying dividends, and we are now breaking the consumer-to-consumer referral bracket. And that, to me, that's the real sign when we are getting that, and it's less on the allied health market.
So a year and a bit in, what has taken you by surprise with the business?
The business model started with service coordination based on 100% everyone getting it. That's dropped down to 20 to 30%. So what does that mean for a viability? What are the numbers we need to see per month for Ivana, one of my social workers, to have a regular income stream? I still don't take an income because I'm the one that set up the business. That's taken me by surprise. I think the EKIA is taking us by surprise. We're now starting to see plans come out at 3 months.
So the early childhood, early intervention pathway.
Yep. So If you, for example, if you hadn't done ABA, then they'll give you a 3-month plan to trial that before they'll give you a 12-month plan, even though there's an evidence base. Now, I think that's a violation. Oh,
I didn't know that. Yeah, keep talking while I just pant and recover. How can you get ABA off to a great start in 3 months?
You can't. So at the moment, I'm now working with a very, very reputable service, and we're fighting very hard for the family. I don't tell the family as much of the advocacy I do because they're really worried. But I go very hard on the planner. So at the moment, I've asked the question, where in the operational guidelines is the policy directive for 3-month plans in early intervention? And they came back and explained it to me in relation to the client. I said, I'm not asking about the client. I want to know what the policy guideline is so that I can understand the rules of engagement. I said, because if you follow that logic through, it would mean every person would get a 3-month would have to be doing an early intervention service for 3 months prior to getting a plan. And I said that would have to be a violation on the UN Convention of the Rights of Persons with a Disability and the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. Now, needless to say, I haven't heard from the planner.
My gosh. That's amazing. Absolutely
and
amazing.
And that's tiring. It's very tiring to keep going back and having these debates. Or I've sat in planning meetings where the planner told me that autism is a chronic medical condition.
Oh, yeah, I know.
So, I mean, the great outcome of that was we got a new planner for that family and they ended up with a brilliant plan. But that requires me going, the parents are overwhelmed. They don't know what to do, and I just call it in now. So I've got past trying to be the nice one. That's the role of the family. My role is to be the advocate, and we will go hard for the family. It's funny.
This time last year you were nice, were you?
The first couple of plans I was nice, yes.
Oh, gosh.
Now we go in and the problem, even I did a review last week or 2 weeks ago, and we were asking for a speech-generating device. And the reviewer who's been doing this role for 2 years turned around and said, oh, but what's the support item number for it? I'm going like, you've got to be kidding me. You should know this stuff. So anyway, I provided it for her.
Yep, good. It was just best you did.
Yeah.
Best you did.
That sort of detail they haven't got their head over. But, we live, Spectrum Clarity, we live and breathe support
items. Yeah. Yeah. Given the growth you've had in the first year, what do you think business is going to look like, say, the end of 2019?
Will we survive it, my team and I?
I asked.
What it will look like? I don't know.
Really? Not at all? Not even a little hunch?
I think we're going to have some worries about viability for businesses, to be honest. I think market failure is a really big thing. As much as the allied health are worried, we know the big providers are losing money and don't have a sustainable or financial business model
at all. Still, no. And probably won't.
Yeah. No. And they're losing, I know of one provider that's losing $100,000 a month. That is not sustainable.
No.
Then you go like the allied health group, they're struggling with, well, what's the quality safeguards and will they be viable and time and all that.
Pricing.
Yep. So you've got all of that. So will we actually have solid providers? I don't know. And then families, it's interesting, as a parent, I'm on a number of closed Facebooks and their understanding of NDIS is not good. It's rumour. It's not clarity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then how they also think they're getting ripped off by providers. So, of course, I can't help myself but add to the debate there and go, well, I think that's a really not a good way to think about it.
Greedy providers.
Well, it's interesting. One provider was charging something and then increased it as soon as they went onto the NDIS. So the question becomes, as I say to families, how much do your provider really need to know what about where the funding's coming from, as long as they're being paid and what they're doing? It just depends how you play it. But it's actually having that holistic view. And I think for those that are in the assistive technology SWEP and all of that, that is just That's just another
that whole needs wine. We need wine and pâté for that conversation.
Yep. That blows my head around. So we always get them done in the first quarter of a plan, and we track the families. And then we've now learnt once we get to a certain point, we just go, okay, local member.
Yeah.
And that gets the results. So
end of next year, I'm hoping that you're still busy and making the differences that you want to be making and that you're viable.
Well, we're financially strong. It's just whether or not we'll get it in the service coordination, because it's lovely to do pre-planning. However, we actually want the relationship with the families and to prepare them in a, you know, and, you know, we work under the whole capacity building, which is what they want, but that's what typical social work is, teach and empower families to take over. So we actually don't want to stay in their life at all. We want to teach them how the NDIS works and learn how to play it really well, and that we'll have given them some tools to prepare them and sustain them. So, and our tools are very simple. We don't have lots, but they just work really well, and they're visual as well. So, I mean, I love the business, and I think it's a great product. It's just whether or not people are prepared to pay for accredited mental health social workers in the scheme of things. We're very cheap at $94.06 service coordination for what we do. But anyway, it is what it is.
Yeah, and the 6 cents, goodness. that's important, that bit. You work, I'm mindful of time, and you have to go and be awesome somewhere else in a few more minutes. You work with lots of allied health professionals, and something that you and I have spoken about on and off over the last year is how allied health professionals can be really, really helpful in the pre-planning phase or even the pre-review phase. It's a little bit same, a little bit different. What's a couple of tips that you can share up that OT, physio, speech, psych, even exercise physiology, whoever's teaming around the child and family, what is it that, how can they be thinking and what can they be doing to support in that pre-meeting kind of phase?
So they need to be thinking of having a fairly good understanding of what the child needs are, you know, what's the child's disability. What is the impact on daily, the functional impact on daily life? And it might sound negative, but you kind of have to go there. And then what would be the goals for that child in the next 12 months with recommendations for frequency of contact? And if that also includes whether or not you need some assistive technology or home modifications, particularly for OTs or speech, that becomes really critical. That's for the pre-planning. When you come back to annual review, you actually need to report on what were those goals, and the goals should have been broken back down further from the generic NDIS goals. How have they progressed, and what success has been achieved? So now we move to success. But what future goals are required, and again, what would be the frequency of therapy? So you want to be able to demonstrate within 12 months some progress, or great, you know, some level of progress, but you still need a long way to go, because let's be clear, none of these children are ever going to get there on a 12-month. They might, you know, even if they're working on independent skills, they've also got to maintain functional capacity. And I keep saying to the NDIS, it's about sustained skills. So it's not just it's been taught, has it been sustained for them to move to the next level? So you're scaffolding. And often in autism, these children also need not 2 to 3 hits, they need 2 to 300 hits because of working memory or whatever.
Yep.
And they don't understand it. You have to take away your clinical language into basic language that a bureaucrat who doesn't understand any of that.
Be polite, just be nice. Yep.
Yep. Just forget. They'll understand it. They can eyeball it. And I like a letter that's got 4 paragraphs that they eyeball it and they can go, yep, I've got it. And that means it's about the communication power that you're having. I know, you know, as allied health, we all want to love what we do, but it's dying to your professional self a little bit in favour of your client, your participant, for the outcomes to get. It's just changing the way you're working in a simpler language and keep, you know, the world, you don't, less is more.
Yep, yep. I get the sense that there's a bit of a tendency for allied health professionals to sit with comfort in their more medical kind of assessment protocols, if you like, and that there's the scoring and provision of information about the old standard kind of tests that some might still use. And that means that it's a real leap of hope and faith than any other leap for parents and people like yourself and the planners to actually extrapolate the so what factor. What does it mean for this kid's life now and going forward? And so I kind of get a sense that there's the need to release some of the old more medical kind of deficiencies kind of scoring, if you like, and have a more functional everyday life domain type view. Is that your sense of it?
It is. It's exactly all of that, and it's the analytical skills. You're observing all of that, but what does that actually mean in self-care, in communication, in mobility? You know, follow those areas in Section 24 of the NDIS Act, and you're great. Then they get it. You kind of just go, okay. I mean, I read many of those reports, and I go, I have no idea. And I'm an ally. I'm allied health, and I have to work really hard. You don't want anybody to be working too hard to get that information. It comes back to, that's why I say you should be able to eyeball it. And this is what I learnt me in my MBA. You should be able to eyeball the report and you can get the message quickly. And if you can't and you give it to someone, so my husband always reviews our work because he's not technical, he'll go, I don't get it. And so it's that communication power. So you're right, you have to move it into that. And underpinning that medical, you have to move to person-centred practice. That is the key of the disability, or, you know, person-centred, family-centred practice, but generally in the disability field, it's person-centred practice. You must get your head around that because that is a key of both legislations, the Disability Act 2006 in Victoria and the NDIS Act, and any standards that are underpinning all of that. So, you know, we're no longer the king, the client is king in a funny world in his way. And it's also being, responsive, returning phone calls. Too many of the families are saying, oh, they don't return my calls, text or emails. Please do.
Customer service.
And that's what we're winning on, actually, because we do all of that. Social workers.
Yeah, so much to learn. And the NDIS is driving us back to the future in some ways and kind of careering us towards a different sort of future. But there's some really good learnings, very human reminders along this adventure as well about personal outcome measures, person-centered practice, customer-centric service delivery, all of that good stuff, which is sort of fast-tracking us a little bit in the against the mainstream commercial world, but there's still plenty kind of screaming as they kind of progress with this as well. So
it's hard. At the end of the day, we've all gone into this sector because we care. We're not here to make things. But we actually have to keep that, you know, we still have to straddle it because the market, you know, it's a fragmented market now also, which I don't think is also helpful. But we actually, families are now wanting a different response to us. And also means you don't have to keep with those families. There's only one standard in the whole of Australia, which is in the aged care sector, that has a mutual response. We have rights and responsibilities, which everyone has to do as a consumer charter. But the aged care says we have your commitment to us and our commitment to you. It's a mutual obligation, which is what we've adapted at Spectrum Clarity. And so if a family's unhappy, they don't need to go and give us a whole spiel of why they're unhappy. They can just leave. In truth, they don't. But we are open to that, and we say it's the same that way. So if we're working with you and we don't get a sense there's respect and you're not returning our text, phone calls or emails, that's okay. We're probably not the same working for you. And we actually use that test even with our allied health, because I keep saying you actually have to have a can-do attitude. And I have worked with people that keep wanting to use back on the email, where you feel like saying just get on the phone and try and work through an issue. It takes courage, it takes maturity, but in fact that's we actually are behaving autistic if we don't, in a funny way, and we need to get back to that the personal side of things. And that's what it's all coming back to again, which is where social work was 20 years ago, 25 years ago, which is why we started it. This practice was we wanted to go back to the fundamentals we knew were right. You can't hide behind the technology is an enabler. It doesn't mean you hide behind it either.
Yeah, and out of the busyness of delivering a service, you need to be a really proactive and energetic and committed business owner as well. Mm. And that now more than ever is the time to really have a look at when you're on the tools, when you're off the tools, and how you make all of that other stuff happen, or else you're going to be very lonely and very isolated.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I just got asked from an NDI planner down in Traralgon, would I be the service coordinator for a family? It's so remote. And I said, no problem, I'm using Zoom now.
We love a bit of Zoom. Zoom solves most problems, I think. I think it solves many, many things.
I know. So that was interesting, the fact that that's already been asked. I thought, yay, because we're going to be fighting for that one.
Gosh, well, I am delighted to hear that. Thank you so much for our very speedy chat. We've covered most things, I think. I don't know. We've romped through the NDIS. I think it would be great to get you back later in the year, particularly for your thoughts about what resolves with the independent pricing review, where Allied Health is sitting, what planning, pre-planning looks like as well, because every time we speak, which is every couple of months, there's a new story and a new layer. So I respect your NDIS knowledge incredibly, and you answer most of my NDIS questions. So if you're up for another chat that's less rapid later in the year, we'd love to have you back.
No, that'd be great. Thank you for having me, and it's a real privilege, Kathy, as always.
All righty, thank you.
Okay, bye.
So today on the podcast, we've had Elaine Jackson, who has a social work and a very impressive business management leadership background, and she's the founding director of Spectrum Clarity. So in the show notes, you will find links to her website and other links to other parts of the conversation. And thank you for listening. Thank you for investing your time right through to the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. If you're running a private practice and keen for more business confidence and management know-how, head on over to our website, nacre.com.au. I'll spell it, nacre.com.au. Over there, you'll find all sorts of business resources and inspiration, blogs, forms, web events, freebies, our virtual conference information, workshops, and more. And don't be shy. Take advantage of the free power call and book yourself into my diary for the chance to have a business chat and to pick my brains. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, wishing you and your business a brilliant day.